Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, November 11th. A new day for Odessa. New leaders look forward to positive change. The story was written by Kim Smith. Mayor-elect Cal Hendrick had his first post-victory newspaper interview Thursday. He spoke about priorities, next steps, and the city council's relationship with the newspaper. Quote, "I hope you don't have anything to write about because they're just doing their job. They're doing good stuff, and it's so boring," Hendrick said. He then corrected himself and said he hopes the Odessa American will be busy writing about a thriving downtown and other positive developments. Hendrick and incoming council members Craig Stoker and Eddie Mitchell, in separate interviews, agree they have a lot of work ahead of them to correct what they see as serious missteps by the folks voters gave the heave-ho on November 5th, Mayor Javier Hoven, Denise Swanner, and Mark Mata. The trio, who will be sworn in on November 26th, also have serious concerns about the leadership the current council put into place, City Manager John Beckmeyer and Deputy City Manager Agapito Bernal. Stoker said a direct line can be drawn from the city's trash, roads, and water issues to city leadership. Quote, "If you have a city manager who knows how to manage his department heads and runs departments efficiently and effectively, then those don't continue to be a problem," Stoker said. The day after the election, Hendrick, Stoker, and Mitchell had lunch with Steve Thompson, who easily defeated Nayeli Urias to retain his District 2 seat. Quote, "It was a nice opportunity for the four of us to sit down and get to know each other and visit about our campaigns and what we went through and witnessed and really just kind of what our thoughts and goals are for the future, because we all do represent distinctly different areas of town," Stoker said. No plans or promises were made because they need to understand exactly what they can do as council members, Stoker said. Under the city's charter, council members are fairly limited in what they can do. Quote, "But I think something we all agree on is that we've got a lot of issues with city leadership that need to be addressed almost immediately, and we want to understand how we got into this situation, and what, if any, are the remedies to figuring them out with the least amount of impact to the city and to the taxpayers," Stoker said. All three of the newly elected men said they have serious concerns about Beckmeyer and Bernal, but they are also distressed knowing that Beckmeyer, Bernal, City Attorney Dan Jones, and City Secretary Norma Aguilar have 3-year contracts that call for them to be paid the balance, no matter the circumstances of a departure. Quote, "We got to get City Hall correct. We're losing too many qualified people because they're unhappy. So the first day, I think that's what we'll start discussing because everybody knows about the contracts," Mitchell said. "When I say City Hall, that's what I'm talking about. There's a lot of problems. They may have to jump out that roof with them parachutes they got," end quote. After the current council fired City Manager Michael Marrero and City Attorney Natasha Brooks in December 2022, a lot of workers left, leaving the city without experienced people in key positions. Quote, "You had quite a few qualified people that might have worked another 10 years that know what's going on. They wouldn't have quit their management positions," Mitchell said. Stoker was blunt when talking about Beckmeyer, the former head of the Texas GOP, who was hired without having any city managerial experience. Quote, I think everybody understands that the city manager we currently have is not the right city manager for Odessa. He does not meet the qualifications that this council even set for itself to hire, and we want to take a look at that role and make sure that even looking at the qualifications the former council set, we want to make sure those things are met, and at this point, we don't think they are being met, Stoker said. We think there are issues upon issues upon issues piling up at the city, and definitely leadership is a top priority, and finding appropriately qualified leadership is something that we discussed, end quote. Mitchell agreed, quote, if your leader doesn't know anything about management, then he can't help his followers. He's got to have some kind of sense of saying, hey, this is what I got to do to make everybody, not everybody, but we've got to keep 80% of the people happy around here. So if your chief in charge can't keep his people happy, then he needs to be replaced. That's with anybody. So we got to get that under control, Mitchell said. Hendricks said, throughout the entire campaign season, he spoke with city workers, and he was alarmed by what he heard. Quote, I talked to multiple departments where there is a fear that words will get you on the shit list or get you promoted, Hendricks said. Many said they wanted to put his signs up, but they feared being fired, Hendricks said. Quote, they're so scared to speak out and say, hey, we need to address blank, or we need to do something. They're so scared of being fired, they keep their mouth shut, and so you can't go to work in an environment of fear, okay? And I think leadership starts at the top, and I think we have to address what many perceive to be a personnel issue, Hendricks said. We have to look at whether we have the right city manager to affect positive change, end quote. Stoker had similar experiences. Quote, my question that I asked everybody was, do you feel like you have the opportunity when an issue arises to go to a supervisor, report the problem, and be shielded from any sort of retaliation or backlash? And kind of across the board, the answer was no, Stoker said. Steps have to be taken to change that, he said. Quote, leadership by intimidation has got to stop. If you can't run a city like any corporation would run, where you're not being sued into oblivion every 5 minutes, then you need to start replacing your leadership, Stoker said. Once he's sworn in, Hendrick said he'd like to meet with employees in every department to give them his personal email so they can tell him how he can help them on a macro, not a micro level. It's the city manager's job to manage on a micro level, Hendricks said. Quote, we're not here to make those kind of changes. That's not our job. It's not our responsibility. But we want you to be happy. When you go to work for the city, we want you to be happy about it. Part of that's compensation. Part of it's working without fear of retribution, without being terminated, without being scared to speak your mind, and be safe from discipline to termination, Hendricks said. He also wants to send another message. Quote, you want to get favoritism? Work hard, do your job, and then I'll favor you. I'll love you. Why? Because you're just doing your job. You're doing it with happiness. You're doing it with enthusiasm. That's who's going to get rewarded, people who do the job and do it well, he said. Hendrick also said he definitely wants to look into the legality of the Golden Parachute contracts and the contract Beckmeyer signed with the Texas Government Accountability Association, which has promised to help the city in its efforts to be transparent and ethical by creating policies and procedures. He also wants to look at the contract signed with Forest Brothers Tires, since a competitor is now suing the city, claiming they were awarded the contract unfairly. Quote, I think the legal department and the city council has to address those contracts, and the reason I say that is I haven't seen any yet brought to light that are in the best interest of the city, Hendricks said. I'm going to guarantee you of all the things I want to do, we're going to do what's in the best interest of the city, end quote. In the coming days, Hendrick hopes to develop a 100-day plan, prioritizing what issues he'd like to address, but he said that during lunch, he told the men he expects there will always be some dissent on the council. Quote, one of the things I told them is that, you know, we're not going to be a squad. You have to do what you think is best for your district and the city, so we're not playing these games. On the other hand, I want to work with you guys, Hendricks said. I just said, guys, I want to tell you right now I don't have a specific agenda except to say we have infrastructure problems. I think we have issues at City Hall, and I think we have to work together and not be ugly to anybody, end quote. If tensions run high at council meetings, Hendricks said he simply plans to call for short recesses where people can stretch, get a coffee, and come back to the table calmer. You can disagree and not be disagreeable, he said. Being disagreeable just isn't productive. Mitchell said there will be no backroom deals. Quote, we all talked about that. Hey, we can disagree, but we're not going to go into a room with three people and come out and say, this is what we're going to do. We got five councilmen plus Councilman-at-Large Craig Stoker plus the mayor. We want to come to an agreement where it's a majority vote, not three people running everything. That's what they were doing. Mata, Javier, and Swanner was deciding for everybody. There was a lot of behind-the-wall stuff going on, Mitchell said. Hendricks said his philosophy is simple. Quote, I know our guiding principle will be to look and make sure that everything we do is good for Odessa. And as long as it's good for Odessa, then how do we get in trouble? He said. If you look a year from now, I want you to say, dang, those dudes have been working hard. There's activity. You may not always agree, but I want you to be able to say, wow, they're really churning and coming up with ideas. They all may not be great, but there's a purpose behind them, all of which is, how can we make Odessa better? Code 8 files suit against City, Hoven, Swanner, and Beckmeyer. The story was written by Kim Smith. Matt Coday, president of the Oil and Gas Workers Association, has filed a $25 million counter lawsuit against an Ector County Hospital Board member and is now seeking an additional $25 million from the City of Odessa, City Manager John Beckmeyer, Mayor Javier Hoven, and Councilmember Denise Swanner. Back in August, Ector County Hospital District Board Member Wallace Dunn filed a defamation lawsuit against Coday. According to the lawsuit, Coday has been attacking Dunn on social media since February 2022 and falsely accusing him of violating HIPAA laws since August 2022. Dunn claims in the lawsuit that Coday appointed him to the OGWA board in September 2021 and began attacking him because he repeatedly asked Coday to hold regular meetings and to provide him with financial records and past meeting minutes. According to the lawsuit, he resigned because he began to suspect Coday was trying to cover up unethical or illegal conduct, quote, including Coday's use of donor and member dollars as his own personal slush fund, end quote. Dunn's attorneys described Dunn as a highly respected and influential individual within Odessa, and Coday as an admitted alcoholic drug addict who has had numerous criminal convictions for intoxication, writing bad checks, and theft. The lawsuit includes a list of instances in which Coday posted negative things about Dunn on social media, including allegations that several members of the Odessa community had filed complaints with the Office of Civil Rights for disclosing private identifying information about a patient and made derogatory comments about the woman and her family. Dunn's attorneys allege Coday was the only one who filed a complaint with the Office of Civil Rights, and on August 18, 2023, the OCR informed Medical Center Hospital CEO Russell Chippin that after a thorough and detailed review, it was closing the complaint. According to the lawsuit, Dunn filed a public records request with the OCR and discovered the agency had actually changed the name of the accused party to MCH. Dunn's attorneys allege Coday was aware of the change, knew the investigation was closed, and yet continued to say Dunn was under investigation. In January, Coday created a GiveSendGo account seeking legal fees because he claimed a false report was filed about him with the Odessa Police Department, the lawsuit stated. The lawsuit alleges that in May, Coday again posted on his GiveSendGo page that Dunn was under investigation for violating a patient's HIPAA rights, and he continued to make the same allegations as recently as July on Facebook. Coday was given the opportunity through Dunn's attorneys to retract his statements, but he declined, the lawsuit stated. Dunn is seeking damages that exceed $250,000. On October 31st, Coday's attorney, Steve Hirschberger, denied Dunn's claims and filed a counterclaim against Dunn, accusing him of slander and defamation. Quote, Coday would show that on numerous instances, Dunn had falsely accused him of criminal conduct, being crazy, and made false representation about his physical and/or mental well-being, the counterclaim stated. Dunn knew the statements were false, but he made them to cast Coday in a false light or to harm and injure him physically and mentally and to further damage his reputation within the community, the lawsuit stated. On November 1st, Hirschberger filed a third-party petition against Hoven, Swanner, Beckmeyer, and the city of Odessa, seeking an additional $25 million, claiming they too defamed him and that they retaliated against him and attempted to discredit him. Quote, the defendant utilized criminal process to censor Coday and his freedom of expression, the lawsuit stated. The city of Odessa has a policy of not commenting on pending litigation. According to Odessa Police Department records obtained by the Odessa American under the Texas Public Information Act, Swanner, former Hector County Republican Chairwoman Tisha Crow, and Dunn filed a report with the police department in November 2022, accusing Coday of harassing them at council meetings and on social media. Crow told police she saw a Ford F-250 in front of her residence on November 15, 2022, and when she ran the license plate using her insurance company computer, it came back to Coday. Crow and her husband Chris own a farmer's insurance branch. Police determined no crimes had been committed by Coday. Then, last December, an unknown person texted OPD Police Chief Michael Gerke asking for someone to investigate a man for walking around in and out of houses in the Crow's neighborhood and supplied the chief with Cote's license plate number. Cote said he was in Andrews at the time, and again, police determined Cote had committed no crimes. On March 21st, the Attorney General ordered the city to release the name of the texter, and it turned out to be Hoven, a political ally of Swanner, and, at that time, of the Crows. The Texas Rangers declined to investigate the matter, despite a request from Cote's former attorney, Bobby Bland. In addition, the Texas Department of Insurance closed the investigation it launched into Tisha Crow without taking any action. Cote had filed a complaint against her, noting she told police she used her insurance company's computer to look up his license plate. Here are some Odessa American quick hits. Ring the bell. The Salvation Army is excited to announce the return of its annual Red Kettle campaign in Midland and Odessa, spreading joy and the festive spirit of Christmas. As the Salvation Army's primary fundraising initiative, the Red Kettles play a vital role in providing life-changing programs and services throughout the year. These programs include food assistance, shelter for people experiencing homelessness, emergency financial assistance, youth programs, disaster response, and more. From the beginning of November until Christmas Eve, Red Kettles will be stationed outside various stores and local businesses in Midland and Odessa from Monday to Saturday. Last year, the Salvation Army successfully raised $186,000 through the campaign, and this season they are aiming to raise $250,000 to support year-round services in the community. The Salvation Army is seeking volunteers to ring the bells at the Red Kettle. Sign up by visiting www.registertoring.com and follow the prompts to select a date and time to ring, or call the Salvation Army at 432-683-3614. Visit www.salvationarmymidland.org, call 432-683-3614, or visit 600 East Wall Street in Midland, or call 432-332-0738, or visit 810 East 11th Street in Odessa to donate or learn more about how you can support the Salvation Army this Christmas. Celebrate vets. Preston Parrott wants American veterans to know they are appreciated and is asking West Texas to help him honor them. American Legion Post 430 will host its annual Veterans Day event at 11 a.m. on November 11th at 2701 East 8th Street in Odessa, with Jay Hendricks scheduled to give remarks. Veterans will then attend the canteen to have a toast to their fellow veterans. Quote, "That's a tradition we've been doing for years," Preston said. "The veterans salute their comrades wherever they are and wherever they live, and we celebrate them with a shot of cognac," end quote. Veterans Day started in 1919 when President Woodrow Wilson proclaimed November 11th as Armistice Day to honor the Americans who served in World War I. The war's ceasefire was at 11 a.m. November 11th, 1918. In 1938, U.S. Congress made November 11th a federal holiday, and the name was changed to Veterans Day in 1954 to honor the veterans of World War II and Korea.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Weekend Edition for Saturday, November 9th, 2024. UTPB honors veterans with celebration and recognition program. Odessa. Veterans Day honors all military veterans of the United States Armed Forces. This year, the day falls on Monday. However, programs to honor and recognize veterans across the Permian Basin have officially begun. The University of Texas Permian Basin, UTPB, Veterans Day Celebration and Recognition Program took place Friday morning on the university's Odessa campus. Sandra Woodley, UTPB president, said that this event is a long-standing tradition on the campus. Quote, one of the things I love about it, the Veterans Day program, is the way that we get to celebrate and honor those who made sacrifices for us and our freedom, end quote, she reflected. Quote, and I enjoy the wonderful opportunity for our students to provide music that will nourish our souls together, end quote. The keynote speaker, retired U.S. Army Commander Sergeant Major David Cunnett, reflected on the significance of Veterans Day while emphasizing the dedication, bravery, and sacrifices of veterans who have served. Quote, these are individuals who answered the call of duty, not for fame or fortune, but because they believed in something larger than themselves, a belief in a nation where ideals of liberty and justice prevail, end quote, he told audience members during the ceremony. Additionally, Cunnett shared his own experiences from his 23-year military career, highlighting the importance of teamwork and leadership training. Quote, these are the most remarkable soldiers you could ever meet, end quote, he recalled. Quote, these soldiers came from different backgrounds, races, religions, and beliefs. Each one is a unique story woven into the fabric of this nation. But while they differed in many ways, what united them was a bond forged in shared experiences, in challenges, and an unwavering commitment to a commitment of mission, end quote. Cunnett said that one of the most profound aspects of the military for him was going through 6 combat deployments. Quote, we honor veterans not because they're different, but because they're the best at what we all strive to do, dedicated, disciplined, and willing to endure hardship for the sake of others, end quote, he said. Quote, their sacrifices reflect the great strength of character that defines our nation today, end quote. Cunnett added that Veterans Day goes beyond a single day of celebration. Rather, honoring veterans should be continued throughout their lives. Quote, Veterans Day isn't about a single day on the calendar. It's about a lifetime of remembering, respect, and continued support. Many veterans bear visible scars, both physical and mental, that do not fade with time, end quote, he said. Quote, we must ensure that they have the resources needed to live healthy, fulfilling lives. We must commit to helping them find meaningful work, medical care, and community. It's up to us to make sure they know they are never forgotten, end quote. The posting of the colors was performed by the Odessa Fire and Rescue Honor Guard, while the Pledge of Allegiance and Pledge to the Texas Flag was recited by Sophie Ramirez. Tabitha Jones, a UTPB music student, performed the Star-Spangled Banner. Javon Johnson, a pastor from Crossroads Church, gave the invocation for the ceremony. The UTPB band performed and recognized veterans from all branches of the U.S. military. The band performed favorites such as Armed Forces Medley, The Caissons Go Rolling Along, The Marines Hymn, and Anchors Away. Woodley shared that UTPB is a veteran-friendly university. Quote, we take great pride in supporting our students who are veterans and our families in the community, end quote, she said. Quote, so it's a normal part of what we value and prioritize here at the university, end quote. Surveillance towers result in 12,000 migrant apprehensions in Big Bend sector. MARFA. U.S. Border Patrol has deployed additional autonomous surveillance towers, ASTs, in the Big Bend sector, which will increase the monitoring of border crossings. Quote, ASTs give us complete domain awareness in remote locations, allowing us to monitor certain areas more effectively. This technology enables us to secure the border more safely and efficiently, end quote. Acting Chief Patrol Agent Marco Cervantes said in a press release. The two newly installed towers bring the AST count to 54. In fiscal year 2024, ASTs in the Big Bend sector detected 1,686 instances of border activity, the release said. Migrant encounters are down 58.4% compared to fiscal year 2023, credited to the use of ASTs to disrupt criminal smuggling operations. Since the Big Bend sector began using ASTs in April 2021, the towers have detected 18,339 instances of border activity, resulting in 12,192 apprehensions, the release said. truck drives off Loop 250, crashes into car below. A pickup truck drove off of Loop 250 on Friday and crashed into a car below. A 93-year-old man was transported to Midland Memorial Hospital with life-threatening injuries after his vehicle, a 2018 Honda Ridgeline, left the elevated Loop 250 roadway while traveling eastbound and approaching the overpass at Big Spring Street, according to an update from the City of Midland. The vehicle fell into the area near the intersection of Big Spring Street and the Loop 250 South Service Road. The pickup collided with a Toyota Camry that was traveling southbound on Big Spring. The driver of the Camry was released at the scene with minor injuries. MPD officials reported the incident occurred at about 11:49 p.m. It snarled traffic in the area for hours. The city informed the public of traffic delays and asked that heavy vehicles find alternate routes. Quote, it is suspected that the driver of the Honda Ridgeline experienced a medical emergency prior to the collision based on witness statements, end quote, MPD said. Quote, the investigation is ongoing, end quote. CBP officers seize THC products, firearm parts at Laredo Bridge. Laredo. U.S. Customs and Border Protection officers on Tuesday seized more than 41 pounds of THC products and firearms components hidden within a commercial shipment at the World Trade Bridge. Officers performed a secondary inspection on a tractor trailer whose shipment lacked proper documentation. They discovered 41.71 pounds of THC products, such as vape cartridges, seltzer beverage cans, gummies, and roll-on gel, according to a CBP press release. Additionally, officers found three Colt AR trigger weapon components and 16 AR-15 barrel nut tools. Quote, officers conducting outbound operations demonstrated exceptional effort in successfully disrupting the smuggling attempt, end quote, said Port Director Alberto Flores for the Laredo Port of Entry. Quote, this is a prime example of efficient targeting strategies utilized in the cargo environment to help ensure exported products are safe for consumers, end quote. Homeland Security Investigation Special Agents have initiated a criminal investigation. MMH to resume surgeries after IV fluid shortage. Midland Memorial Hospital will begin rescheduling elective surgeries on Monday, November 18th, after a shortage of IV fluids caused supply concerns. Quote, our supply of IV fluids is still not at normal levels currently, but it's stable thanks to more regular shipments that we can begin resuming elective surgeries, end quote, a hospital spokesperson told the Reporter Telegram. Postponements began November 5th. The nation felt the impacts of damage to Baxter International's facility in North Carolina, which was struck by Hurricane Helene. Baxter is a major manufacturer of IV fluids. MMH says elective procedures already set for the week of November 11th will go on as scheduled. Pianist Yan Shen returns to Midland College for recital. Yan Shen, a concert pianist originally from China, will perform a piano recital at Midland College on November 16th. Shen is a classical concert pianist and formerly a tenured piano faculty member of the Guangzhou Conservatory of Music, China. Shen holds a Doctor of Musical Arts in Collaborative Piano and Artist Diploma in Solo Piano Performance from the University of Houston's Moores School of Music. Shen has performed solo and chamber recitals internationally. Quote, this is Yan's second time coming to Midland, end quote, said Stephen Hopp, a registered piano technician and owner of Piano Works Gallery and Clocks. Quote, Midland audiences have sort of really fallen in love with her, and we've been bombarded to bring her back, end quote. The piano recital is made up of two main components, the first being Shen playing pieces by the composers Chopin, Rachmaninoff, and Tan Dun. The second part of the recital will feature Rhapsody in Blue. Rhapsody in Blue is known for its integration of jazz rhythms into classical music. It premiered in New York on February 12, 1924. Quote, Rhapsody in Blue is probably the piece everyone is coming to hear because it's so famous and it's turned 100, end quote, Hop said. Quote, Yan has already been traveling around and performing that piece with orchestras throughout the country, end quote. Shen and Hop will play a piano concerto or a two-piano version of Rhapsody in Blue. Shen will be playing the piano solo part and Hop will be playing the orchestral part of the composition. Quote, I just have a lot of fun playing this piece, end quote, Shen told the Reporter Telegram. I feel a lot of freedom playing this piece because it has a jazz style and is not as restrictive, end quote. Shen said she doesn't have a specific favorite style of music. Quote, I just always want to have fun with music and enjoy it, end quote, Shen said. Quote, I am playing very strong pieces at the recital and I think the Midland community will really like it, end quote. Shan added that she's very glad that the community remembered her and asked Hop to invite her back to Midland. Shan's piano recital will be held at the Midland College Allison Fine Arts Building on November 16th at 7 p.m. Midland College students will receive free admission to the recital. Tickets cost $20. For tickets, reach out to Trish Pickens at 402-672-7241. Commodity prices gain as OPEC Plus delays production increase. Commodity prices posted a weekly gain, buoyed by several factors: Hurricane Rafael, the presidential election, the decision by OPEC Plus to delay its production increase, and an interest rate cut. But that support weakened as Hurricane Rafael's impact on supplies would be minimal, and disappointment in China's latest economic stimulus efforts. West Texas Intermediate rose 3 of 5 trading days on the New York Mercantile Exchange, opening the trading week with a $1.98 increase. Additional gains Tuesday and Thursday sent prices near $72.50 a barrel. But WTI posted a $1.98 loss Friday to close the week at $70.38, up from $69.49 at last Friday's close. The posted price ended the week at $66.86, according to Plains All American. Natural gas futures rose 2 of 5 trading days on the NYMEX, starting the week with a 12-cent climb, followed by Tuesday's 11-cent retreat. Prices fell 3 cents to end at $2.665 per MCF, up from $2.642 at last Friday's close. Ed Herz, energy fellow at the University of Houston, told the Reporter Telegram the week's price actions were not related to the presidential election. Quote, "This is oil trading this month for delivery next month. Nothing in the price had to do with the election," end quote, he said. Quote, "In fact," Citi analysts said, "under Trump, they expect oil prices to be at $60, end quote. Although the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and Allied Nations postponed plans to return to market the 2 million barrels they had withheld this year, Herz pointed out that Saudi Arabia especially is unhappy with cheating among some members. But the country didn't want to be a factor in the U.S. election, he said. The direction of oil prices under a second Trump administration depends largely on Saudi Arabia, Herz said. Quote, "If Trump pursues a goal of cheap gasoline, he can only do that with the agreement of the Saudis," end quote, he said, pointing out oil prices in his first term were lower than during the Obama or Biden administrations. To lower gasoline prices to a level of, say, $1.87 per gallon, he said oil prices would have to fall to about $45 a barrel. The president-elect may be articulating policy goals that appear to be mutually exclusive: expanded oil and gas drilling and cheap gasoline, Herz said. At $45 a barrel, he said drilling would stop, something already seen with the decline in the rig count and flattening of production. Quote, "I'm deeply concerned $45 a barrel would send a lot of independent operators back to bankruptcy court," end quote, he said. One thing that will help oil, gas, and financial markets is stable policy without too much whipsaw, Herz said. If that's achieved, quote, "we'll get through the next 4 years in great shape," end quote. Odessa event to honor 26 veterans with Quilts of Valor. The Permian Basin community is invited to join the Quilts of Valor Foundation in honoring 26 veterans during the annual Quilts of Valor presentation ceremony. This year's event is set for 2 p.m. Saturday at the First United Pentecostal Church, 1700 North Texas Avenue in Odessa. The event is sponsored in part by the Midland Quilters Guild. The ceremony will honor veterans from various conflicts, including Vietnam, the Cold War, the Gulf War, Operation Iraqi Freedom, and Operation Enduring Freedom. This year, 3 of the honorees have the distinction of serving in combat deployments in 2 wars. However, according to quilter and organizer Phyllis Price, combat experience is not a prerequisite for receiving a quilt. Quote, "We want to honor all veterans," end quote, she told the Reporter Telegram. Quote, "Some people think that combat is a requirement, but it is not. It takes an entire machine of soldiers to run smoothly," end quote. Price said that no matter the job or function a veteran performs, all veterans are eligible for a Quilt of Valor. As long as veterans have an honorable discharge from the military, they are eligible for the honor. In 2003, the Quilts of Valor Foundation began with a dream by its founder, Catherine Roberts. At the time, Roberts' son Nat was deployed in Iraq. Quote, the dream was as vivid as real life. I saw a young man sitting on the side of his bed in the middle of the night, hunched over. The permeating feeling was one of utter despair. I could see his war demons clustered around, dragging him down into an emotional gutter, end quote, she wrote in a statement on the foundation's website. Quote, then as if viewing a movie, I saw him in the next scene wrapped in a quilt. His whole demeanor changed. From one of despair to one of hope and well-being, the quilt had made this dramatic change, end quote, Roberts wrote. Price said more than 401,000 quilts have been made nationwide since 2003. She also added that people can make individual nominations by visiting www.qovf.org. For Saturday's ceremony, one of the veterans being honored is retired U.S. Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant Ed Duchok. Duchok began and ended his career in military combat. He began with four tours in Vietnam and concluded as the battalion maintenance chief for the 3rd Light Armored Reconnaissance Battalion during the First Gulf War. Quote, I was a big fan of military movies like John Wayne, Audie Murphy, and all the really big ones, end quote, Duchok told the Reporter Telegram. Quote, I spent years when I was very young watching combat on TV, and once I got into it, I started learning things that I could do, end quote. Duchok said that moving forward within the military came naturally to him. Quote, everything I've learned over the years is by doing something, end quote, he commented. Quote, I found that being a leader is right up my alley, end quote. Approximately 7 years ago, Duchok relocated to the Permian Basin, where he began his work with the Permian Basin Red Cross. Since then, he has made more than a dozen disaster relief deployments throughout the nation, such as serving as a shelter manager during Hurricane Katrina. Attendees for the ceremony are asked to arrive by 1:45 p.m. to allow time for check-in and seating. Parking is available in the lots on the side and directly behind the church, with entrance permissible through any of the three open doors. Midland County's rig count rises, continuing 4-week growth streak. Drilling activity was unchanged almost across the board during the first full week of November. Oilfield services firm Baker Hughes said Friday its U.S. rig count was unchanged at 585 rigs for a record third consecutive week, according to the company's records going back 37 years. The count is down 31 rigs, or 5%, from 616 a year earlier. The number of rigs seeking crude oil was unchanged at 479, down 15 rigs from 494 the previous November. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas was unchanged at 102, down 16 from 118 last year. Texas was also unchanged at 281 rigs, down 21 from 301 last year. New Mexico was steady at 100 rigs. Oklahoma 2, Pennsylvania 1, and Wyoming 1 were producing states to see an increase. Colorado 1 and Louisiana 3 were producing states to see declines. The Permian Basin was also unchanged at 303 rigs, down 7 rigs from 310 last year. Lee County, New Mexico, continued its reign as the most active county in the Permian, reporting 50 rigs for a third consecutive week. Eddy County, New Mexico, was second with 47 rigs for a fifth consecutive week. Midland County's winning streak continued into a fourth week, rising one rig to 30. Martin County and Reeves County each had 28 rigs, down one for Martin and unchanged for Reeves. Loving County had 22 rigs at work within county lines for a third week. Reagan County had 13 rigs for a fifth consecutive week. Upton and Ward counties each reported 12 rigs, unchanged for the week. Energy-dedicated software-as-a-service firm Enverus said its U.S. rig count for the week ended November 1st fell 8 rigs to 582 and is down 55 rigs, or 9%, from 637 a year earlier. The number of rigs drilling for crude was down 1 rig to 165 and is down 208 rigs, or 56%, from 373 last year. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas was down 2 rigs to 82 and is down 70 rigs, or 46%, from 152 a year earlier. ExxonMobil was the most active operator by rig count with 36 rigs, while ConocoPhillips was unchanged at 28 rigs, and Occidental was unchanged at 27 rigs. Enverus Permian rig count for the week ended November 1st was down 5 rigs to 290 and is down 30 rigs, or 9%, from a year earlier. The most active play, the Delaware, was down 1 rig to 169 and is down 2 rigs, or 1%, from the previous November. The Midland Basin was unchanged at 101 rigs and is down 22 rigs, or 18%, from last year. By trailing 30-day drilling permits as of the week ended October 18th, the Permian had 644 permits, down from 658 the previous week and 698 a year earlier. The Permian had 107 frac crews as of the week ended October 18th, up from 106 the previous week, but down from 156 a year earlier. Coming together for the Festival of Lights. Hindu Association of West Texas celebrates Diwali with cultural program. The Hindu Association of West Texas is hosting its annual Diwali cultural program on Saturday at the Horseshoe Pavilion, showcasing their Indian heritage with cultural dances and ethnic food. Diwali, also known as Deepavali, is the Hindu festival of lights where families come together to light lamps to symbolize the triumph of good over evil. Quote, during Diwali, we worship Lakshmi, the goddess of prosperity, end quote. Said Chairman of Board, Mala Ramanathan, quote, it's not necessarily monetary prosperity, but the prosperity of health, happiness, and more, end quote. During Diwali, families come together to light lamps in their homes in the evenings and mornings to bring in positive energy and remove negative energy. Quote, Diwali is usually the triumph of good over evil, end quote, Ramanathan said. Quote, we light lamps so we remove the darkness and bring brightness and knowledge in, remove the ignorance and so forth, end quote. Families also reminisce about how light triumphs over darkness, knowledge prevails over ignorance, and good triumphs over evil. Ramanathan said that in India, traditionally, they wake up in the morning and take a shower while their mothers made special sweets and snacks. Quote, we used to eat those treats and go to around the neighborhood playing with friends and lighting firecrackers, end quote, Ramanathan said. Quote, firecrackers symbolize the brightness, end quote, said Jwala Ramaya Adangi, the priest of the Radha Krishna Temple in Midland. Ramanathan added that each house has mud lamps with oil and wicks that are lit indoors and outdoors at their homes, and that they decorate with flower garlands during the festival to invoke the deity and attract positive energy. Quote, we light the lamps to bring in positive energy into the house, end quote, Ramanathan said. Quote, it's a time of purification of the mind for us. And it's not just bringing positive energy into the home, but also internally, end quote. Trustee of the HAWT and family physician, Shatur V. Ramanathan, said Diwali is one of the festivals that unites all of India. Quote, we have many different races and different languages spoken in India, but this is a festival that is celebrated all over India at the same time, end quote, said Ramanathan. Ramanathan added that because there are a billion people living in India, that the Festival of Lights could probably be seen from outer space. Although the temple already did their religious celebrations of Diwali on November 1st, they will be doing the cultural aspects of the celebration on Saturday and are inviting the community to attend. Quote, you will be seeing all the different dances, songs, food, traditional clothing, jewelry, and more, end quote, Ramanathan said. The Deepavali celebration on Saturday will consist of traditional and Bollywood-inspired performances and will also offer traditional Indian cuisine. Quote, we invite the local community to come and enjoy our Festival of Lights, end quote, Ramanathan said. Quote, our mayor is coming and we always welcome the local community to come enjoy our Festival of Light and Hope, end quote. The Diwali cultural celebration will be held at the Midland County Horseshoe Pavilion on Saturday from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Life Tributes. Linda Janine Crass, 10-10-1954 to 11-7-2024. Linda Janine Crass, 70, of Midland, passed away Thursday, November 7, 2024. Graveside service will be held at 3 o'clock p.m. Tuesday, November 12, 2024, at Rest Haven Memorial Park in Midland. Linda was born on October 10, 1954, in La Mesa, Texas, to Daryl Crass and Jean Bradford Crass. Linda is survived by her best friend and cousin, Terry, sister Dara Crass Richardson, brother Derek Crass, nephews Rayland and Wyatt Richardson, and aunts, uncles, and cousins. She is preceded in death by her mother and father. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Lone Star Animal Sanctuary, Fix West Texas, or your favorite animal rescue organization. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Lisa K. Hopper Stanley, 2/27/1955 to 11/5/2024. Lisa K. Hopper Stanley went to be with her Lord and Savior Jesus Christ while surrounded by her family on November 5, 2024, in Dallas, Texas, following heart surgery. Lisa was born on February 27, 1955, in Big Spring, Texas, and grew up in Stanton, Texas. Lisa was preceded in death by her parents, Delbert and Jimmy Hopper of Stanton, Texas. She is survived by her loving husband of almost 50 years, Bruce Stanley of Colorado City, Texas. She is also survived by her children, Amanda Benix of Waxahachie, Texas, Elena Laredo of Fort Worth, Texas, Kelly Glenn of Midland, Texas, and Keith Stanley of Midland, Texas. Lisa's grandchildren, who affectionately called her Lily, are Alexandra, Atticus, Julissa, Lucas, Aaron, Savannah, Caden, Bryson, Addison, Xander, and Zaria. She is also survived by many close aunts and uncles, nieces, nephews, and cousins. A celebration of life service will be held at Nellie Pickle and Welch Branch Building in Midland, Texas, on November 10, 2024, at 2 o'clock p.m. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Buster F. McCullough, 5/24/1941 to 10/31/2024. Buster F. McCullough went to be with his Lord and Savior on October 31, 2024, at the age of 83. He was born on May 24, 1941, in Seminole, Texas, Gaines County, to Buster and Grace McCullough. Buster is survived by his son, Scott McCullough, of Houston, Texas, his granddaughter and pride and joy, Cheyenne Partlow, of Midland, Texas, and his only great-grandson, Landed Partlow, a brother, Waylon McCullough, and sisters Tony Taylor and Brenda Danley, and sister-in-law Ruth McCullough. He also had so many nieces, nephews, and great-nieces and nephews, and lots of friends. Buster is preceded in death by his parents, Buster and Grace McCullough, his brother, Jack McCullough, his great-nephew, Zachary Henson, his brother-in-law, Alan Taylor, and Donna Westbrook. A visitation will be Monday, November 11, 2024, from 6 o'clock p.m. to 8 o'clock p.m. at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Services will be 10 o'clock a.m. Tuesday, November 12, 2024, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Interment will follow at Fairview Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to the Wounded Warriors Project. Buster was a very proud veteran and loved his country. The family would like everyone to join them at the American Legion, 501 Veterans Air Park Lane, Midland, Texas, after the service for lunch. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Marilyn Mack. Marilyn Mack, 69, of Midland, passed away November 4, 2024. Memorial service will be held at 1 o'clock p.m., Thursday, November 21st, 2024, at St. Luke's United Methodist Church in Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. SMS, Success in Dean Formation Will Spur More Wells. SM Energy is getting a first look at results in its Klondike area in southern Dawson County and likes what it sees. Quote, we have 8 wells online, all Dean wells, of which 2 have reached peak 30-day initial potential rates, end quote, company executives reported during its third quarter earnings call. Quote, the first 2 wells averaged 918 barrels of oil equivalent per well at a very high 93% oil cut. We are pleased to see early results coming in a little stronger than our acquisition model, end quote, officials said during the call. The first two Klondike wells had an average lateral length of approximately 11,500 feet. Completion of the eight wells confirmed oil-saturated sandstone and the conventional nature of the play in line with the company's geologic modeling. Given the confidence gained in the oil productivity here, the company has moved a rig back on location and will spud another six wells at Klondike by year-end, according to SM Energy officials. Officials told analysts during the earnings call that initial wells targeting the Woodford Barnett in the Sweetie Peck area continue to perform well, with cumulative oil production exceeding the peer average in the area to date by more than 50%. Diamondback Energy swaps assets with TRP Energy. Having absorbed Endeavor Energy Resources, Diamondback Energy is stepping even deeper into its Midland Basin holdings. In announcing its third quarter results earlier this week, the company revealed it has agreed to an asset swap with TRP Energy, in which Diamondback will trade certain Delaware Basin assets and pay approximately $238 million in cash to TRP in exchange for TRP's Midland Basin assets. The deal is expected to close by year's end. In a letter to shareholders, Travis Stice, chairman of the board and chief executive officer, said the trade was rooted in the newly combined Diamondback Endeavor acreage, quote, that has given us the flexibility to look at different opportunities across the Permian Basin, end quote. Stice wrote that the swap with TRP, quote, allows us to play offense in our backyard by swapping a PDP-heavy asset in the Delaware Basin for a Midland Basin asset with more near-term development potential, end quote. TRP's Midland Basin assets are made up of about 15,000 net acres across Upton and Reagan counties and consist of 55 remaining undeveloped operated locations, the majority of which immediately compete for capital. It also includes 18 drilled uncompleted wells, DUCs, that provide for additional capital allocation flexibility. In exchange, TRP is receiving Diamondback's Vermejo asset and the cash. Quote, we will also continue to look for ways to improve our asset base, whether it be through traditional trades to be able to drill longer laterals and increase operated working interests, or out-of-the-box ideas such as TRP, end quote, Stice wrote in his letter. Endeavor acquisition update. Stice also offered shareholders an update on Diamondback's $26 billion acquisition of Endeavor. Since closing the Endeavor acquisition on September 10th, the combined teams have worked quickly towards a seamless integration, onboarding more than 1,000 employees and moving over 650 combined offices, he wrote in his letter to shareholders. He continued that the teams have already begun sharing best practices. Quote, at a high level, we have essentially merged two teams of basin experts. While we were once competitors, we can now share best practices and learnings from years of drilling and completing wells in the Midland Basin with what we believe is more combined data and basin experience than any competitor. This is a synergy that could not be modeled in our spreadsheet when the deal was announced. But I am confident this will accrue to the benefit of our stockholders in short order, end quote, he wrote. He told shareholders the company is ahead of schedule in delivering the operational synergies promised in conjunction with the merger. The drilling and completions teams have already implemented the two most significant operational synergies, clear fluids for drilling and simulfrac for completions. All Diamondback development in the fourth quarter will be executed with simulfrac completions crews, with spot crews to be used for single well tests like the Barnett Shale in the Midland Basin. On the drilling side, quote, as of today, all of our rigs are operating with clear fluid drilling systems, and we have already seen wells on legacy Endeavor acreage drilled below post-synergy expected cost per lateral foot, end quote. Stice noted that at the time the merger agreement was announced, Diamondback promised to drill and complete wells for $625 per lateral foot in 2025 on Endeavor's acreage, end quote. I can say that today, in real time and 2 months post-announcement, we are averaging $600 per lateral foot across the combined company, above expectations and ahead of schedule, end quote.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.